50 years ago, babies in the U.S. were 3 times more likely to die before reaching their first birthday. And the problems driving infant and maternal mortality were more severe in rural areas. Diane Cantor wanted to help change that, so she left college in the early 1970s to work for a federal program that provides prenatal care to women in North Georgia. And her experiences inspired a novel called When Nighttime Shadows Fall. Diane Cantor lives in Savannah now, and she appears Tuesday at Acapella Books in Atlanta. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Celeste. It's great to be with you.
It's good to have you. So, you know, reading through this book, the experiences of your character are relatively similar to the experiences you went through. So why write fiction instead of nonfiction?
Well, as I always try to explain to people, I think writers are inspired by events that come to their attention, and writers also listen to other people and are moved by things they see. And then in that process, they take those stories and those experiences and turn them into fiction, make them something else. These are some of these characters are composites. They're things that some of it's told in the third person. So I or a protagonist couldn't even be there. They're things I imagine. And that's what I think we do as writers. We open our eyes and we listen to everything around us. And then we also guess about things. And we try to make it as true as possible. But we realize that what we see, just the little piece we see, isn't all there is.
What kind of things were you able to do because it was fictionalized? In other words, were you able to sort of create composite characters, as you just described, and or change events in a way that helped the novel move?
Yes. I've always been the sort of person, I'm not sure why it is, but people just tell me things. If I sit on an airplane, if I met your best friend, I would probably, in a few minutes, know things about that person that maybe you didn't know, just because people tell me things. So I feel that that's just this remarkable privilege, and I listen to that information. And then I also have always been a person who envisioned things and tried to realize that a few experiences are just that, a few experiences. But if we think about the greater scheme of things, then we can make it something that's more universal.
So let's talk about the novel itself and some of the stories you tell in this. Let's talk about the experiences themselves, because some of them are quite, I don't want to say tragic, but they're very sad. Some of the stories of young women in these rural areas who've gotten pregnant. How much of that was actually based in truth, and how much was invented?
I don't know that I can give you percentages. I would say that almost everything I saw and everything that's expressed in the book and in the novel, I saw in some way. But I tried, like anyone does, to propel the action and to move the story forward by coming up with some really very strong characters shaped by things that I saw. And that's what I do in all of my writing. This is a second novel for me, and in some cases, I also have other manuscripts that I hope will be out there soon. And I always try to let what I have learned and what I read about and what I hear about be things that help me create more. But it's certainly true, and this was very reminiscent. I've had people come up to me after reading and say, I almost feel like you were telling my story. How did you know that? And I think because some of these stories were things that many, many women experienced in the 1970s before there was more access to health care and before Medicaid expanded.
So a number of moments in the book are about the attempt to break through silences. And I wonder how difficult it was really in that time to get people to talk about their sex lives, to talk about options when one becomes pregnant.
Well, it was very difficult even to find them because particularly things have changed so much. If you go into a public high school now, in many cases you'll see daycare centers and nurseries and nurses' offices and other places where you can get information and where you can talk to someone about your problems. In those days, it was really impossible for young girls to get help. If someone did not have private insurance or if they did not have access to pay for care themselves, teenagers who were about the most high-risk group there is would have, no health care, and they might not even see a doctor until, if they were fortunate to be able to have the transportation in a rural area to get to an emergency room, they were actually present with a doctor for delivery.
So this young woman, about the same age that you were when you went into rural Georgia, right?
Yes.
And she is, in some cases, having to mature quickly. And by that I mean she has these young women coming to her from all places around the rural area of North Georgia and expecting her to have answers that she doesn't always have. And I wonder, how does one sort of admit one's lack of knowledge on certain things? How does one say to someone who desperately needs answers, I don't know, I have to find that out?
And I guess, Celeste, I would have to say that that's something I still think about in every aspect of my life. We do the best we can. We try to be honest. We try to provide what we can and to be honest about it. But certainly none of us has all the answers. I think in this case, probably what is the most important part of the protagonist is that she is listening and that she is connecting people to something that they didn't have. And she's there and she cares. And I think the book is a lot about empathy and respect for the determination that many people have in order to get through these challenging things in their lives.
Although some of it is about bringing in different perspectives to a strong culture, right? I mean, she's coming from a city area, and she brings her own set of expectations and stereotypes, and she has to sort of set all of that aside. Did that part of the book reflect your own experience?
Yes, it did. And it's also my experience in life that sometimes we find understanding and perspective and knowledge from where we might not have expected to find it. And this protagonist comes in. She finds that some people have certain prejudices towards her or certain opinions of what she'll be like and what she can know as a person from Atlanta. One of my favorite things that happens is when one of the characters who she takes to go get food commodities, which for some of our younger listeners is what you used to get before food stamps, when someone would just go in and go to a county office and receive heavy bags full of different kinds of flour and grains and lard and different things. And they gave out this recipe of recipes to use cooking with commodities. And she turned to the protagonist and said, "Ain't it funny what rich folks come up with for poor folks to eat?" And I think that there are a lot of perspectives that come out in this book, as well as humor that people have, both the protagonist. Also, in some cases, she can be a bit know-it-all, and there are people she works with in the project offices who set her straight about some things. And I think that's an important perspective, as well as the fact that in a time in Georgia and around our country when there was not very much interaction socially between people of different races, some of the project, as it's called, some of the activities that it had brought people together and in some ways helped to cut through barriers of people who had never socialized. And I think that's a really important thing that we all still need to see more of, but also that's one of the benefits of activities that bring people together with others who are going through the same activity, about whom they may have different kinds of perceptions that aren't fair or based in fact.
That's Savannah-based author Diane Cantor. Her novel is When Nighttime Shadows Fall. She'll be in Atlanta Tuesday, 7 p.m. at Acapella Books. Diane, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Celeste.